The reading this morning is taken from Matthew chapter 25, beginning at verse 14 and reading from verse 14 to verse 30. And this can be found on page 994 of the Church Bibles. The parable of the bags of gold. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave five bags of gold, to another two bags, and to another one bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received five bags of gold went at once and put his money to work, and gained five bags more. So also the one with two bags of gold gained two more. But the man who had received one bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received five bags of gold brought the other five. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with five bags of gold. See, I have gained five more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with two bags of gold also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with two bags of gold. See, I have gained two more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received one bag of gold came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Fantastic. Do leave that open, that Bible passage open, and we're going to be thinking about that together. So we've, for those who've been kind of coming along these last few weeks, we've been doing this little kind of topical series called In This Together. It's a really simple idea. Jesus on the shores of Galilee, when he calls the disciples to follow him, he says, "Come and follow me, and I will send you out." So in other words, as soon as we follow Jesus, we are sent out in his service. This is something that we are all called to. It's not just the elite few, maybe people like me, kind of professionals, so to speak, who do the really important stuff. No, not at all. Actually, all of us have an important role to play in Jesus' service. And a few times I've used the analogy of a stadium. And you have the stands with people kind of watching the game, then you have the pitch where people are actually playing the game. And it's easy to think that as a Christian, I'm in the stands and I'm kind of watching on as the really important stuff is done by others. But that's not true. Jesus, when he says, "Follow me," leads us onto the pitch. He's the captain, we're part of the team, and we're all involved in his work of the kingdom together. He gives us gifts with which to serve him. He gives us everything we need in his word, the Bible, and the teachers and people he puts into our lives to equip us so that we can be in this great work of Jesus together. But just to state something which might be kind of totally obvious, but it's definitely worth saying, which is that life kind of in the stands, so to speak, rather than on the pitch, definitely looks a bit easier. Right, as soon as you get onto the pitch, then it's harder, isn't it? I mean, just think about the actual analogy, right? So playing the game requires training, which is often hard work. It requires prioritization. So you say no to a load of other stuff so that you can focus on the outcome on the pitch. It leads to injury, right, often, when you're playing the game rather than just in the stands. And also like this sense of responsibility. You actually care about the outcome and you take a sense of personal responsibility for if it goes well or badly. Okay, and all of these things can apply to what it's like to step out onto the pitch with Jesus. Okay, it's obviously easier and more comfortable to be a spectator Christian rather than fully engaged in the work of Jesus. At least it can feel easier. There's the training, right? You know, to actually follow Jesus requires us to get to know the Bible, to actually develop a relationship with him through making time for prayer and that kind of thing. There's the injuries. As we step out into the world for Jesus, sometimes we get flagged. And some of us here will have family who aren't Christians and, you know, colleagues at work or friends who give us a hard time for following Jesus. That happens. You get injuries. You have to say no to other things. Sometimes things that feel very appealing in order to put Jesus first. And that can feel like a hard thing sometimes as well. And just that sense of responsibility that I actually now really care about the work of his kingdom in this place. It feels painful to me when there are setbacks and difficulties. And equally, it feels exciting to me when things are growing and when there's real progress for the kingdom of Jesus. But taking responsibility is much harder than just sitting in the stands and being like, oh, well, you know, someone else is going to look after that. So for all these reasons, and probably others, it can feel easier just to be a kind of spectator Christian rather than to get out on the pitch with Jesus doing his work in our world. And I think the other thing it's worth saying is that often for many of us, life just feels a bit overwhelming, right? So, you know, we just heard from Christian and Abby, it's like busy work lives and busy stuff with kids at home, or maybe you're retired and life feels no less overwhelming when you retire and suddenly your health starts declining and there are so many challenges. And you just think like, literally the last thing on my to-do list right now is going to be being on the pitch for Jesus. It just feels like there's too much else going on. And so it can feel easy, therefore, to retreat to the stand. So we've got to grapple with this fundamental question of motivation. Okay, and that's the single idea with which we're going to round off this series together. Okay, motivation. Why? Why, given that it's so much easier to slip into spectator mode, why would I, day by day, wake up and say, today is a day when I am living for Jesus? You know, whether it's in, you know, the relationships that I'm going to have that day, or the work that I'm going to do that day, or the people I'm going to encounter that day, why would I wake up and say, today is a day when I am living for Jesus, no matter how much it might cost me? Okay, motivation. Actually, when you think about it, motivation is pretty like central to everything in life, isn't it? If you think about it, whether it's the health of the nation or the health of an individual, motivation is right at the heart, isn't it? I mean, think about the economy as a very big picture thing, right? Right at the heart of the economy is not a clever chancellor who balances the sums, it's motivation, right? If people don't want to get out and work, then the economy is going to tank. Okay, fundamentally, it's a question of motivation, which is why if a nation as a whole goes through something like a meaning crisis and doesn't have any motivation, then the economy is going to tank. It's interesting that, isn't it? It's not really about policies, it's about something in the heart, motivation. What's true for a nation is true for individuals. Like when some of us maybe are in this place ourselves, I don't know, maybe you've got friends who are in this place, but when you literally wake up in the morning and think, I can't think of any good reason to get out of bed today, Okay, and that's a bad place to be in. It's an unhealthy place when you don't have any motivation. Now, when you become a Christian, one of the wonderful things that happens when you join Jesus' team is that he gives you this amazing motivation for life and for life following him. Okay, that motivation, it surges its way around every component of your life, your work, your relationships, your home life, managing young kids, how you use your resources, how you manage your time. His motivation empowers everything that you do, such that even though it's costly to give your life in service of Jesus, there is nothing that you would rather do. Do you see, it's a really important question, isn't it? This key idea, motivation. Why? Get out of bed today and say, today is a day that I'm living for Jesus. And it's what this parable that Chris read to us is all about. All about this idea of motivation. It's quite a simple story, isn't it? Three servants, one master, very wealthy, very generous master. He's got huge resources, differently allocated, but the servants don't really seem to mind about the difference in allocation. Instead, there are three servants, but really only two kinds of servant. There's the motivated ones, and there's the unmotivated one, right? So the motivated ones, they get their five bags, their two bags, and straight away off they go, and they put it to work for the master in his service. And then when the master comes back, there's these wonderful words, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. That's the story of the motivated servants, right? But then there's the unmotivated one, and he gets one bag of gold, and he doesn't even bother putting it in the bank to get some interest. He literally just digs a hole, buries it, and forgets all about it. He forgets all about his master, and he just gets on and does his own thing. Unfortunately, the master doesn't forget about him, and when the master returns and asks for an account, he has nothing to say other than some wafer-thin excuses. And he's called out, and it literally all ends in tears for that servant. Okay, so it's a simple story. In the wider context of Jesus' teaching at this point, he is in the last week of his life. He's heading to the cross, and he's got a real focus on the fact that after he has died and risen from the dead and ascended to heaven, there's going to be a long wait. And after that long wait, Jesus will return. And he wants us to know, as his people, what should we do? What should we do whilst we wait for him to return? Right? So in this story, Jesus is the master, the generous one who gives his resources to us. We, each and every one of us here today, are the servants. And the story is an encouragement to those who want to serve Jesus faithfully. And it's a warning as well. That third servant acts as a warning against, just as it were, burying all that stuff in the ground, forgetting all about it, and just living for yourself. An encouragement and a warning. And it answers this question, what should motivate me to get up tomorrow and say, today is a day where I am serving Jesus? Okay, what should motivate me? So that's what we're going to think about. Actually, two motivations we see in this passage. But before we get to them, we need to be crystal clear on something that doesn't motivate the faithful servants in this story. Okay? And that is, this is not a story about these servants trying to earn their master's acceptance or approval. It can be very easy to misread this story in that way, right? So that God becomes the cosmic examiner. Okay, it's exam season at the moment, isn't it? Oscar, have you finished your exams? Okay, Oscar's finished his exams. It's a horrible thing doing exams. Like, you know, you revise, you revise, you revise, and then it all goes into the exam, and then the examiner marks them. You either pass or you fail. And it's easy to think of God as the cosmic examiner. Life is the exam. You do your best, and at the end, he marks your paper. And he says, okay, either you're in, or it's the other place. Okay, and you are motivated basically by fear to try and get his acceptance. And you try as hard as you can. That is not what this story is about. If you notice, these servants have already been accepted. They're already his servants. Okay? Already, he is entrusting them with considerable responsibility and considerable wealth. This isn't a test. This is a story about people who have already been brought into God's family and about how we now respond to that. Right, so this isn't a story about how our good works eventually gain God's approval. It's about something else altogether. So if it's not that, if it's not fear of gaining God's acceptance that motivates them, what is it that motivates them in this story? It's grace. It's God's grace. Okay, the undeserved, lavish generosity of their master. And you know, when we grasp this, when we are motivated by God's grace, it will unlock in each of us the most powerful motivation for a life of fruitful, joyful, sacrificial service to Jesus. Okay, so past grace and future grace. That's what motivates these faithful servants. First of all, past grace. Just have a look at verse 15. Right, to one, he gave 5 bags of gold. To another, 2 bags. And to another, 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. Right? He gave. These servants had nothing. And the master gave them everything. Right? That's grace. Generosity that they are given by the master absolutely everything. And they recognize that everything that they have comes from him, and the reason that their master has entrusted, and isn't that a beautiful word, by the way, entrusted these things to them, is so that they can put them to use for him, in his service, and for his kingdom. You know, I sometimes stop and think, and I think it's pretty overwhelming when you think about the grace that God has given to us. How generous he has been. I always think about my own life. He called me out of darkness and into his light. He put me among his people. He gave me his spirit and his heart to change me. He's kept me through some difficult times. He died for me. He's promising me to make me a place in his kingdom forever. Not only so, but he's given me gifts and abilities. And I just love it when I get to use those for him. It brings me such joy, such a sense of purpose. He's given me resources, money, material possessions. I mean, here in Henley, I might not feel very rich, but goodness me, compared to the rest of the world, I am so well looked after materially. Amazing. All from him. Relationships. God has put people in my life who love me, who care for me, who look after me. Do you know, Jesus says in another similar parable that he tells, to those who have been given much, much will be required. I remember that because I am someone who has been given much. Well, what about you? Stop and think. What has he entrusted you with? What family backgrounds has he blessed you with? What gifts and abilities, passions, has he generously given you? What fortunate circumstances. Okay, what lucky breaks that he has actually been overseeing behind the scenes for us? What people has he placed into your life who have been a significant help to you and have shaped you and formed you into the people you are today? What financial and material resources has he entrusted into your care so that you might use them for him? Do you know there are some less obvious blessings as well, less obvious gifts that he's given us? Hardship that has refined us and enabled us to be a blessing to others in a way we could never have predicted. Maybe a set of circumstances we would never have chosen, but he is working for good in our lives. All these also are part of what he has entrusted to us. All of it, grace. We deserve none of it. We did nothing to earn any of this. He has given, given, given. Five bags of gold, two bags of gold, one bag of gold. It doesn't really matter. He's given all of it to you. And when I recognize all of these come from Jesus, of course, I want to put them to work for Jesus, right? Wherever he's called me. Past grace motivates me to get out of bed and say, today is a day I've been given by Jesus so that I might serve him. Okay, not fearfully kind of grasping on to the things that I've been given, but joyfully releasing them for him, because they all came from him anyway. When you think about it, it's a scary thing, isn't it? For the guy who had five bags of gold, what must it have felt like when he spent the first bag and then the second bag, wondering if any of it was going to come back? It's so tempting to dig the hole, isn't it, with the things that Jesus has given us. But he says, no, 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 spend them. Give them away. Give your time away from me. Give your money away from me. Give your abilities and talents away from me. And just you watch the return that will come for my kingdom. And remember, all of it came from me in the first place. Past grace. But not just past grace, future grace as well motivates them. Because it's not just his past generosity, it's his future return that these servants are mindful of. They know that their master, right? He's coming back. Look at verse 19. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. And the man who'd received five bags of gold brought the other five. Master, you entrusted me with these five bags. See, I have gained five more. Right, it's a long time. It would have been so tempting for them to think, well, maybe he's never coming. But they knew that their master was faithful. And so they knew that he would come. And he did. And they knew that their master was generous. And so they had every expectation that he would look on their faltering service. That's often what it feels like, isn't it? Faltering, but wholehearted nonetheless service. That he would look on that and be yet more gracious to them. And that's exactly what they find. These wonderful words, verse 21, his master replied, and by the way, identical words to the person who was given five bags and the person who was given two bags. The point is, don't look around at the people, what other people have. Keep your eyes fixed on the master. The same wonderful words to both of them. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Isn't that wonderful? Do you see what they receive? They receive his affirmation. Well done. Isn't it a lovely thing when someone notices our labor and says, well done. You did a good job. And that's what Jesus will say. Well done. You did a great job. Okay, we receive his affirmation. We receive yet more responsibility in his service. He says, you've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Oh my goodness, like, why would he entrust such responsibility to me? Well, what a joy, what a pleasure. Having been faithful with a few things, I get to be responsible for many things for all eternity in his new creation. That is amazing. And then perhaps most wonderful of all, he says, come and share your master's happiness. Right, we get to be with him in his joy forever. If you've ever thought that like God is like a bit severe, it's just not true. His happiness, he's happy. He's like eternally joyful. And we get to be part of that. So in a sense, like Jesus himself is the reward. Right, Christians, we do get rewarded for our service. But Jesus himself is the reward. Receiving his affirmation, enjoying his presence, being involved in his service for all eternity. Okay, this is grace upon grace upon grace. Okay, and this should be motivating. Right, friends, you will see Jesus. And you will have a conversation with him about everything that you did for him in this life. Right, those unseen moments that no one saw, he sees them and he'll say, well done. I loved it when you cleared up that mess, even though you didn't make it. And that was just a small blessing, but I loved it when you did that because you reflected my heart. I loved it when you sat with your colleague for that lunch break and just listened to their tears because they were so cut up about the mess at home. And no one ever saw that, but I saw it and I loved it. Well done. You know, you will see Jesus and have a conversation with him about everything that you have done in this life, in his service. And he will lavish yet more grace upon you for all of your service. Isn't that amazing? Past grace, future grace. What is it that motivates us to get out of the stands and onto the pitch? It's Jesus himself. Do you see these faithful servants, what do they keep their eyes fixed on all that time? It's the master. The fact that he has given them everything. The fact that he is coming back. And friends, if you want the sure way to live an unproductive, unfruitful life, forget about Jesus. Forget his past grace. Assume that everything you have is thoroughly deserved, that actually it's all your own hard work and effort. Okay, forget about future grace. Forget that there's a day that you will talk with Jesus face to face. Just forget all about it. And I can tell you, if you forget past grace and if you forget future grace, you will just live for yourself now. And you will bury your bags of gold in the ground. If you want to live a fruitful, joyful, productive, wholehearted life, remember past grace. It all came from him. Remember future grace. He will lavishly reward you for all that you do for him now. Do you know the Apostle Paul said this wonderful thing in 1 Corinthians 15? We'll finish with this today. He said, his grace to me was not without effect. No, I worked harder than them all, yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me. That's a great, like, single sentence summary of the story that Jesus tells. His grace to me was not without effect. What about you, friends, at work? Are you serving Jesus at work, at home, as you bring up the kids, as you look after the grandkids, as you care for your neighbours? Is his grace for you having an effect at home? What about here at church? So many opportunities, so much to do, a whole community to win for Christ. Is his grace to you having an effect? J.C. Ryle, an old bishop of Liverpool, said of that third servant, he said, "He did nothing, and this was his ruin." Let us beware of do-nothing Christianity. Let's remember past grace. Let's remember future grace. And wonderfully, we have a good shepherd who walks through life with us, present grace, every day to sustain us until we see him face to face and hear those wonderful words, "Well done, my good and faithful servants." Let's pray. Our loving Father, thank you so much that you give us this amazing motivation to get up in the morning and say, "Today is a day that I am serving Jesus." Past grace, everything has come from you. We thank and praise you for all that you've given us. And future grace, a day when we will meet you and experience yet more of your grace poured out so abundantly upon us. And so help us to be like those faithful servants who receive all that you give to us and don't just bury it in the ground, but put it to work for you. Give us wisdom in knowing how you're calling us to do that. In Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.